We know many of you listen to this podcast on the go, driving to work, working out, even doing chores. Now you can get CPE credit for that time. With Earmark, you can earn free NASBA-approved CPE for listening to the Inside Public Accounting podcast. After you listen to an episode, take a quiz, and your certificate will be ready. Earmark has courses for everyone in your firm, from staff to partners. Get started today at earmark.app or download the free app on the App Store.
Welcome back to the Inside Public Accounting podcast, where we bring you the numbers and the narrative shaping today's accounting profession. I'm one of your hosts, Rob Brown.
And I'm Chelsea Summers. And today we're going to be focusing on one of IPA's most important annual recognitions, and that's the IPA Best of the Best firms. These are firms that stand out not just for their financial successes, but for systems and strategies that really helped keep them at the top.
And it's wonderful you're doing this, Chelsea, because there's so many great things happening in accounting that are just well-kept secrets. They don't get amplified. Nobody shines a light on them. Nobody gets to know about them. So this recognition piece that you're doing is really valuable. Frame it up for us a little bit. Why does the best of the best and this recognition matter in your eyes?
So every year, Inside Public Accounting has more than 600 firms from the US and Canada submit data in our practice management survey. Out of all those participants, only a select group earns the best of the best designation. That designation is a signal to others in the profession and to their clients that these firms aren't just keeping pace, they're leading.
Yeah, they're setting the examples, they're role models for the other firms, if you like.
Absolutely.
Best practice in action. So let's get specific. How many firms are we talking about on the best of the best list this year?
In the list this year, 611 firms were eligible for the accolade. And from that group, we recognized the top performers, the best of the best. It was 60 firms above 10 million in revenue and 10 firms under 10 million. And then we also had five Canadian firms.
So out of 600, only 75, could it have been more than 75?
That's, we cap it at those numbers every year.
Okay. So only 75 in total received the recognition. That is, out of 600, that's a very elite group.
Exactly. We're talking about just over 12% of our participating firms. And it's important to note that these honorees aren't just limited to one size segment or one geography. We see small firms, we see mid-sized firms, and we see some very large firms represented. And they're really spread across the US and Canada.
I'm just thinking of the joke that men think that they're great drivers, almost to the point where if you ask men if they're better than average drivers, 80% of them think they are better than average. Now, that math doesn't add up. But the reason I bring that up is firms in isolation think that they're doing pretty good, don't they? Mm-hmm. They think they're doing well. They don't necessarily compare themselves to other firms, maybe one or two firms. But you've got an industry-wide, nationwide perspective here. You are looking at things in the round. And I'm interested, these aren't just the largest firms. We're talking about organizations of all sizes.
We have firms this year from 16 employees to 8,000 employees, and they're based in major metropolitan areas and in small markets. The excellence that they show isn't limited by their geography or their size. It comes down to their leadership choices.
That just confirms my notion that size isn't always better. Because if you've got the small firms having the chance to be recognized and the big firms too, we often think, don't they, big firms, big budget, that they've got the scope to do everything. But these small firms, they pivot, they're agile, they've got great ideas, they're innovative. I'm sure we'll go into it a little bit more. But tell us about the process. How does Inside Public Accounting actually determine the best of the best? It seems quite subjective.
So we use a proprietary formula that looks across 30 different metrics from our survey.
Okay.
The financial performance of the firms matter, but that's only part of the formula.
So to the form, you really go into the numbers and the data, don't you?
We do. We dig into the data. I have spreadsheets on spreadsheets to develop this list. There's also factors like staffing models, training, governance, decision-making, and their long-term strategy. Our idea with this accolade is to capture what really makes the firm sustainable and not just who had a really great year because of a merger or because of an outstanding circumstance.
Yeah. I once saw a quote from Michael Jordan, the basketball player, the legend, and he said anyone can have one great game. Anyone can hit one great golf shot. Anyone can score one great goal. Any guy can chat up one great woman one time, but doing it consistently, not everyone can have a great season. Not everyone can have a great career. And it seems what you are doing here is not looking at one-hit wonders and overnight successes, but you are looking at, well, you said the word, sustainable. This is over time. This is gradual, building it up. And I love that about what you're doing.
Yeah, it's not just the short-term wins. It's really about consistent excellence.
Yeah. So let's get into it, Chelsea. What are we seeing as, say, patterns with these top performing firms?
There's a couple themes that come to mind from this list. They're typically advisory driven in their practice mixes. They're leaning into high value services like mergers and acquisitions or cybersecurity, investment advisory, and they tend to scale back on lower margin work like payroll or peer review. And they also have leadership beyond billables. So partners typically log fewer chargeable hours, and that excess hours that they're not charging is freeing them up for mentoring and strategy and business development.
Just a quick note on that one, Chelsea. I hear so many sad stories about partners who will not give up their portfolios. They will not give up their lucrative clients. Mm-hmm. And that absorbs them in the delivery. And they're not doing, as you say, the developmental work and bringing right. people through. So really important. I love the way you put it, leadership beyond billables. That's an excellent metric. What else?
So they also have operational discipline. So these firms are more likely to have documented strategic plans. They have succession plans, client acceptance guidelines. So they have the right clients for their firm, and they have partner agreements in place. And then the last thing is they use smart scale. So they run with higher leverage. They typically have more offices than firms of their size, but they're leaner overhead per professional. So their growth is really balanced with efficiency as well.
So what I'm hearing you say here is that they're very intentional with success. They're not leaving it to chance. It's not a hope and pray some firms say, let's add 10% on next year and a little bit more. And it seems to be like finger in the sky, which way the wind is blowing. So what we've got here, that they're engineering it, that they're planning this out strategically. So that's good advice right there. If you're going to grow, if you're going to do this right, then it's not going to happen. Let's unpack some of these numbers. Partner hours, Chelsea, tell us something about that.
So partners at the best of the best firms average 920 chargeable hours, and compare that to more than 1,000 at their peer firms. That may not sound like a huge discrepancy, but those 80 hours that are redirected into their strategy, into building the firm, that's an investment that's compounding partner to partner, year over year, and really sets the firm up for that long-term success.
Yeah, that's an hour or two a week that they are investing in the firm. And we hear that phrase, don't we? Be working on your business and not necessarily in your business. So they're living and breathing that. Obviously, leaders, partners, they've got a governance mantle. So the gap seems to be getting bigger, as I understand it. You've got 75% of the best firms with written succession plans. I saw that, versus just 40% of all firms that have that. Just talk us through that a little.
Yeah, that really shows it, that it's critical to have succession planning in place. I can't imagine running a firm in an organization where you don't know, if somebody decides to leave, or God forbid something happens to somebody, what are you going to do? Firms that want to endure, they're not just talking about the future, they're putting it in writing and making sure that everybody knows what the plans are.
Again, they're really intentional.
Intentional and strategy.
Yeah. What about pricing? We know that firms struggle with pricing. Take the advisory question, for instance. We know there's been downward pressure on compliance fees and it's been commoditized. So the message going out to accountants is be advisors, be trusted, but they do struggle with pricing that and packaging that and delivering that. So pricing is a very sensitive issue. So you've got some stats on pricing power, and I think there's some quite eye-opening numbers here.
Yeah. And looking at the equity partners at the best of the best firms bill at $607 per hour on average. Okay. Compare that to the IPA 100, those largest firms, their average equity partner billing rate is $597. And for all of our firms, it's $488. So $488 for the average equity partner compared to $607 for the average best of the best equity partner.
But that's $607 per hour compared to $597 with the other top 100 firms. That's not a huge leap, but it is more.
It is more. And the IPA 100 firms are those largest firms, where this best of the best group, some of them are below $5 million. So they're pricing above their size in a lot of circumstances.
And as a former high school math teacher and part qualified accountant doing the math, that's a $160 gap from the average. And that might not seem a lot, but you multiply that by all of the people in the firm and the thousands of hours that they're working, that's a serious revenue lift or revenue deficit.
It is. And it's not just the bill rates. The compensation tells the same story at these firms. Right. For the best of the best, equity partners average $1.24 million annually, compared to $840,000 for the top 100 and a little over $600,000 for all firms. So both profitability, and a commitment to reward their top leadership.
But here's the thing, as I consider those numbers, they'll have formulas, they'll have metrics, they'll have numbers that they want to hit there, they'll have spreadsheets and they'll do it to death, but not everything shows up in the formula. And you can get behind this with the nuance and the stories behind the numbers, right?
Yes. And metrics can tell us a lot, but the culture, the trust, the belonging, those things are a lot harder to quantify.
The intangibles.
Exactly. I wish we could capture them on a survey and a spreadsheet, but a lot of times those things aren't able to be tracked in the same way that your revenue can be and your profit margins can be. But they're often what makes a difference in the tight labor markets or during big transitions like we're going through right now.
I interviewed a professor once, an academic guy, who talked about the death of accounting. And the premise of his work was that the financial reports that audit and things like that produce are not fit for purpose insofar as they do not give investors and the people that count the right information. And when I asked him what kind of information you're talking about, he said they don't speak to culture. They don't speak to training and development. They don't speak to retention. They give you the metrics, as you said, but they don't give you what's behind those numbers and those intangibles. So it's really important there that you can pick that up, that it is not just about, well, best of the best is not just about the numbers and making it big. It's about the fabric, the engagement, your people behind that. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And these firms show that. We can gather some of that from the data. While it all can't be captured, there are pieces that we can infer from some of the metrics that we do track.
Yeah.
So these firms are doing things like they're investing in technology. They're making decisions like, do you have partner agreements in place? Are you analyzing your clients, making decisions that build resilience for their firms and not just building revenue for their firms.
So it seems like a two-pronged approach. These best of the best firms, they've got the numbers, they've got the hard evidence that show that they are best of the best. They deserve to be recognized. But there's a softer side of this, the culture, the soft skills. Some people don't like that term, but the non-technical and the non-technological and the communication and the persuasion and the negotiation and it all comes up into leadership. So yeah, it is a lot more than the numbers, isn't it?
It is. And if you have a firm that, you know, the partners are making lots of money, but turnover is at 40%, I mean, that's speaking to the culture inside of the firm. So there's ways that we can look at that. And I think it is critical to name firms that aren't just making the most money, but that have, we said, sustained excellence over time.
So one of my favorite parts of this report, this analysis, is what you call the discipline factor. Just unpack that for us, Jills.
Yeah, excellence isn't accidental. Nearly all the best of the best firms have those strategic plans. They have partner agreements. They have documented succession, formal mentoring programs. That really shows their discipline in action in what they do inside of their firms.
So discipline in action is what you're talking about. And it obviously pays off because I'm thinking alignment, congruency at these top firms, and it frees them up from, goodness, so many distractions that get in the way of growth, so many different technology platforms, so many different decision makers, so many different voices, so many different stakeholders. I once heard Mark Koziel, head of the AICPA, he was at a conference and he said, the managing partner role is defunct because partners cannot be managed. And because they've all got their own agenda, they've all got different things that they're going on with. Yeah, that alignment is coming out very strongly for me. That's making firms strong. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think there's three things. The firms can design their future. They're not relying on ad hoc decision making. They have documented strategy and succession, which I feel like everything we keep talking about, everything is coming back to that strategy and intentionality. They're investing in their people. They're formalizing their mentoring and training programs and creating good leadership pipelines inside of their firm. They're also strengthening their governance. They're building systems that will foster accountability and cohesion inside of their firms and inside of their partner groups.
I saw a piece from a brand expert for accounting firms recently, and he talked about the Taylor Swift phenomenon and how when Taylor Swift was doing her tours and everything was about her, they rebranded their website. They changed the colors and they changed some of the language to align with Taylor Swift because obviously she's getting so much traffic. But that is that kind of improvisation, that thinking on the hoof and going where the wind blows. These best of the best, they are not improvised. Success is not accidental, as you say. It's very, very intentional. So not going with the Taylor Swift crowd.
As a fellow Swiftie, I think that branding is great. But
well, How do you see it evolving, though, this whole recognition piece, Chelsea?
Yeah, and we will. We've refined it over the years, and we'll continue to refine it. We want to, you know, capture not only those financial and operational strengths, but also the culture, the innovation, the client relationships. And we're finding new ways to bring them into the analysis. As the profession is really going through some major shifts right now, I imagine our formulas are going to continue to change and evolve. And just as we're adding new questions into our survey every year to track these new trends, we'll be adding in different data points into our formula as well.
And the big takeaway for me here, Chelsea, is that this all comes top down. If you have strong leaders that are setting the vision, defining the strategy, aligning everything, being really intentional and bringing people along for the ride, getting the people to buy into the narrative, it's not luck, it's not accidental, it's not improvised, it's not hope. These people are elevating their people. They are reinforcing their practices and processes. They're positioning themselves to grow stronger every year, giving themselves the best possible chance to succeed.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, if our conversation today piqued your interest and you want to dive deeper into more metrics that differentiate the best of the best, you can order that on our website, insidepublicaccounting.com. And also a full list of who those best of the best firms are. We didn't really name drop today. Those can be found on our website as well. So you can check out if, you know, your firm made the list or if the firms in your market made the list, if you are a client and you can see if your accounting firm made the list. So that's available on our website.
That's such an exciting, visible, transparent report to get into because there's templates everywhere in that report for what works and what doesn't. And in an age of uncertainty where best practice is really hard to define, these firms that are consistently doing this right, that's amazing. Thank you everyone for joining us. Yes, if you've enjoyed this episode, share it with a colleague, leave us a review, send us any questions if you want to follow up with anything, and follow so you don't miss the next episode of the Inside Public Accounting Podcast.